94.1 K-Slug, Humboldt's new rock. K-Slug.
It is 9:14, and over a year or so ago, I don't remember now exactly, but I met Robert Salish. He is from the band Kiss the Girl, and at the time, they were based in San Francisco. They're traveling through here, as many bands do from San Francisco, to play a show, and I had him in here. Very nice man. And he is now returning to play a show midweek at the Pearl Lounge. It's a solo acoustic show. It's Wednesday, and the show's at 9 o'clock. He's playing with the Rubberneckers, and apparently he'll be joining the Rubberneckers on stage to do a couple of songs by the old 97s. And I have found that Salish, Robert Salish, has been described as songwriting, that is. He writes about love, loss, sincerely, as someone who's still willing to keep an open heart and experience it again rather than hide in cynical cool, remaining genuinely romantic. The songs offer no easy answers, but instead find meaning in mystery and a lust for life. That is a quote from someone writing for Ride, I think. And beside me now is Robert Salish. Good morning, Robert, again. Good to see you.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me back.
And just to clarify, Ride, what is that, a magazine? Or?
No, actually, that's a quote from, that's one of our songs.
Oh, Ride. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. No, what I do is I intersperse song lyrics in the bio.
Okay.
To really, because that really gives a better idea of like what the music's about.
Okay.
You know, I mean, who wants to know like where we were born and how many cats we have at home, and you know,
well, I suppose.
True. Well, you know, if you really want that kind of stuff, you can like contact me.
Go to
the website and go to the special section.
So, when did you move down to Los Angeles?
Last September, okay. And I moved to Silver Lake, which is it's an astonishingly green and hilly part of Los Angeles. It's kind of like, I heard that 80% of people that move from San Francisco area move to Silver Lake. So when I went there, I was astonished because I lived in LA from like 95 to 97, and I lived in just Hollywood, you know, like South Hollywood area. Nice area, but it's flat and, you know, busy. And then I found this guest house in Silver Lake, and I'm at the top of a hill. And so I have a beautiful view of downtown LA and then Hollywood on the other side, and just a lot of greenery and winding streets with houses packed together, just like Berkeley. It looks like Berkeley or something like that.
Okay. Is it a safe neighborhood, Silver Lake?
Well, you know, LA, all of LA is like spotty. It's like, you know, great neighborhood, two blocks over, not very good neighborhood, two more blocks, great neighborhood. It's not like other places where everything's isolated. I mean, there's some really bad sections, like, you know, certain areas of LA, obviously, poor sections and where there's a lot of crime. But if you go farther, like southeast of me, the area's not very good, you know. But then if you just go east, it's Echo Park, and Echo Park is like a really hip upcoming area. It's just mixed, you know, it's kind of...
Oh, sure. When I was down there, I was living in Venice for a while, and if you walked about two or three blocks inland at night, things got sketchy fast, and there were always helicopters flying around with spotlights shining in the windows.
Yeah, I had to get used to...
pretty alarming.
Yeah, I had to get used to the helicopters. Yeah, they're shining like right across your house and stuff.
In your backyard, they're searching for someone.
Yeah,
who's
not...
It's just...
And then you'll hear like... they're like talking to somebody on the ground.
So why did you move to LA? Was it to...
Music industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is great. It's been great. I mean, the move to LA has been... it was kind of like... I mean, when we talked, it was last July, actually, and I was going through a lot of changes then. And honestly, actually, this is a really interesting story. The Humboldt trip, my Humboldt trip in July, was a watershed for me, a really experience change, because I was so in love with San Francisco, and I'd been there 9 years. And then I came up here, and I did your show, and I did the other commercial radio show, and I played like three shows, you know, and did in stores, and I was going back to, and I sold a bunch of CDs, and I was signed autographs. Nothing. I was going back to San Francisco, and I was like, I don't really want to go back to San Francisco. And I realized that I was done there. There was nothing for me there, because the music industry there's not much happening, and there's obviously talented musicians there and stuff, but there's just industry-wise and just the scene, it's not a rock town. There's great rock bands that have been there that are just not really given much, you know, attention. So that combined with just the culture of the town, which I just don't like. I love the city itself. I love San Francisco, but I just didn't. I don't fit into the culture, and the single scene is a nightmare. So I just like.
Now, of course, it makes perfect sense since you want to work in a serious way in the music world. You should be in L.A. or New York in some sort of large metropolis. but it's rather difficult to just arrive there and just hand someone a tape. It doesn't work like that.
I mean, no.
Have you found it welcome?
Well, no. Well, yeah, probably more than San Francisco, honestly. I mean, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a giant place, and people think people there are shallow and all this kind of stuff. And it's all just, like, meaningless stereotypes. There's a section of Los Angeles that's a shallow environment in the certain parts of the entertainment industry. But I found the people there are nicer and quite friendly and willing to work together. But it just depends. You have to find those people. It's like with any place you go. I mean, I knew as many snotty people in St. Louis as I did and have done in L.A. or wherever. I mean, it's just...
No, of course, but I'm talking specifically about the record companies that will give you a contract. Have you had any luck in that world?
Okay, well, I was gonna address that. It's like, boy... You know, I'm not an expert on anything, but let's just say this. The music industry, as it is collapsing, and it has been for like the last 10 years or so, or about 10 to 15 years it started happening, really started to... The major label industry is collapsing. I mean, there's only like 3 labels left. They're shrinking more and more. There's someone that predicted in 3 to 5 years there will be no major labels left. They will all collapse. But so what's happening is they're breaking down into smaller companies. When you now, as a musician, as a band, basically you're an entrepreneur. I mean, I would say anybody that's a young band... I still hear people going, well, yeah, we want to get signed. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know, it's just this meaningless, ambiguous thing. It's like getting signed by who to what, you know, and any other part of any other business, whether it be, I don't know, you know, whether you're an architect or a plumber, or you're starting a restaurant. It's just the business realities, and that's the way the music business is. It's no different than any other, except that it's based even more on just on who you know in the sense of friends and networking. So... For me as a band, Kiss the Girl, Jamie and I mean, the idea of getting signed is like the only you know, a company could help us. They would have to have enough money to help us, and if they had enough money to help us and they had a lot of money, then they would probably wouldn't sign us anyway, because the companies that have a lot of money are signing bands that sound like somebody else that's on the radio already, and there is no A&R anymore. You talk to anybody. I talked to a guy who's at an A&R company. A&R is Artist and Repertoire, I think it stands for. Those are the people that sign acts to labels. I talked to a guy who works at an A&R company, and he basically said there is no A&R anymore. I mean, there's nobody signing. They don't have any money. So very few people are getting signed because there's no money. They don't have any money to be developing. There's no money to develop acts, first of all, period. And so any they're making all their money off old catalogs and off people like Britney Spears or whoever. And the real music industry is bands like us, bands that are on smaller labels. If I would want to be signed to any label, it'd be somebody like Artemis, maybe, who like has bands like... Reverend Horton Heat, and they're a big indie label. They're an indie label in, I think, I don't know if they're in Atlanta, I think. And they have a lot of recognizable names, but they're not giant bands. They're like, you know, these bands that have been around for a long time that are serious bands. And, you know, a band, because you mean for just like touring, I'm touring by myself because to tour with a band costs money.
So, but then what is the plan? I do recall you had a job, I think it was in design or advertising. Is that still the case now?
Well, I do, yeah. I have my own company. I have a design company. I do web design, and I'm doing pretty well with that. But what we're getting is we're getting licensing. I mean, bands make money off licensing of their songs more than anything. Merchandising, as I'm saying, you're an entrepreneur. You don't wait for somebody to hand you money. You have to figure out how to make. It's like you're a business. Your band is a business, and then you have to figure out how to make that work. And you try to separate, I guess, from the creative end in a way. I don't know. That's a very complicated question. Basically, for us, the most money comes from licensing, and we just got a song placed on. There's going to be a boxed set of all Will Ferrell's movies coming out, a DVD box set, and we have a song on that. We just got a song on there. I just found out. Okay. So we're getting more and more licensing, and we're starting to get money coming in from that.
So at this point, that is the current plan: stay the course and then continue forward.
I'm just going to build. Okay. I'm just trying to build an audience. I mean, it's the licensing thing is great for exposure and money. And then I'm just starting to tour. I'm just going to keep coming up to the West Coast, and I'm going to start maybe going into the Midwest and farther in, and going to the same places, building an audience. I formed a band in L.A., so Kiss the Girls kind of formed in L.A., and we're going to be starting to play there in July, I think. So it's just like I said, it's a business. I'm just building up a fan base, and hoping that I'm hoping that the band will start doing a few trips this fall. And then maybe to Humboldt County, and then I'm hoping by the time we release a new album, like maybe next September or something like that, we will have enough money and enough following to actually tour with a band.
And there are some bands that send me a newsletter because I'm on various mailing lists. And I got yours recently, of course. And in it, you talk about the tour coming up here to Humboldt County. But then it begins in this lengthy discussion of talking about how to deal with one's life. If I could just read a portion of it. Charles Hanel, is that how you pronounce
Charles
it?
Charles
Hanel. Hanel, excuse me. In the Master Key System, talks about how we are all part of the universal mind, rather like Carl Jung's collective unconscious idea, which some would call God. He says that all ideas, all inventions, all power lies waiting for any of us who will take the time to tap into this. He equates the power directly with love, but the idea is too involved to explain here. You can read the Master Key System at this link. And what's going on here? And by the way, I understand the words, but
you said we had 20 minutes, John.
But
what's going on is, like I said last July, it's like, you know, I moved down to LA. I was going through a lot of changes the last 2 years, and I've been moving towards this, like from reading. I read a lot of like science, like quantum physics, cosmology, stuff like that, and then I started getting into reading some Buddhism stuff and Pema Chodron, some of her books, and then reading some of the life coaching stuff, and I've read neuroassociative conditioning stuff. All this different stuff has pointed me in this kind of direction of this idea of that reality is manifested through your thoughts. Okay, and then all of a sudden, what the bleep do you know comes out.
Oh.
And then The Secret comes out, and all this stuff is stuff that I already was coming to and understood. And what those things are is they're kind of like a dummy's version of basic Buddhist thought mixed with quantum physics. And that is, if you look at the quotes, that, like in The Secret, a lot of people, what I love is when I hear people talk about rolling their eyes about The Secret and they've never even read it
or heard it. Yeah, I've heard enough to know.
It's because people think that,
people
think it's something, and it's like talking about LA, you know, and they think it's one thing and it's another. I just talked to a friend yesterday about that, and I said, because he said he'd heard like a little bit of it, and then some friend of his was into it, and he was saying he thought it was like this thing about how to make money and blah blah, and so I explained to him what it was. He says, "Well, I've been following that. I've been following that all along. That's Buddhist thought, basically. So Buddhist thought, basically, the idea is that, I mean, we talked about living in the now the last time I was here, but the idea is that you create your reality through your thoughts. And if you look at quotes by like any number of people for I don't know how long. I mean, from Einstein to, you know, Henry Ford to any successful person." Though the thing about the Charles Hanel, the Master Key System, The Secret is based, most of it is based on the Master Key System that was written in 1912. And like they say, Bill Gates read that, and like every like entrepreneur that became rich in Silicon Valley read the Master Key System.
And these ideas I don't disagree with sort of on the surface, talking about living your life in a positive way. But my problem, and I've not looked at The Secret, looks a bit unusual, and I'm planning on looking at it a little further in the near future.
It's a bit sensationalistic, yeah. but they're popularizing it, you know, for people.
Specifically that one movie, What the Bleep, Do We Know?
Yeah,
Do We Know?
Do You Know?
I expect
kind of a cheesy movie, by the way.
It was terrible. I mean, it was terrible, Robert. And my main problem is just it was an extremely cheesy film. But there's this idea that you can just sort of think about what you want to happen, and then it will happen. It was so.
I don't think What the Bleep Do We Know really showed that much.
Well, I mean, I thought that was the sort of essence of what was. I mean, and it's been a couple of years since I've seen it. I saw it in the theater because I expected something a little more scientific, and then I was just so horrified at what was happening on the screen, I almost walked out. I mean, there were certain people in there who were affiliated with. I didn't know we were going to get down this road. Ramtha.
I was going to say I don't want to. Look, I'm not an expert, but I'll tell you what. That's the one. I was like, who's this lady? And then I realized who she was. I shouldn't be talking about somebody on the air. Anyway. She's helped a lot of people, but I'm not into the whole New Age channeling thing. She's the one person.
But that's
what
that stuff is.
No.
No?
No, it's got nothing to do with that. This is what I'm saying. You got to be careful. Total misconceptions of... Here's my approach to this kind of thing. This is very important. And I said this in the band letter. I talk about this. The band letter before this was kill all doubt and fear. And I said you have to kill all doubt and fear in your life and their perverted cousin cynicism. So when I come up here something that's valuable, I watch it. I don't care about what anybody thinks of it. And they're going, well, some of these people in The Secret, they're not who they say they are. They aren't these experts. And I'm like, I don't need to hear an expert. I need to just hear what they're saying. And if what they're saying... is helpful and makes sense, then I'll listen to the experts, like the people that's quoted on there, you know, Einstein, all these people, Winston Churchill. If you want to listen to quote-unquote experts, if you need to listen to experts, there's plenty that will tell you the similar things. The idea is listen to anything that comes out, you think it could be helpful, filter what you don't like, and use whatever you need to for your life. What stops people from succeeding in their life and succeeding in their dreams and being happy and achieving all these things is their cynicism. And a cynic to me is just a secret idealist, romantic, someone who wants to believe something, but they've given it, they've been disappointed, they've tried positive thinking, or they've tried love, or they've tried marriage, or whatever. It didn't work for them, so their belief system, the world they create for themselves, their belief system is this doesn't work. Marriage can't work. I don't believe in monogamy anymore. I've dated this woman and she was like, oh, I don't believe in monogamy anymore. And she was seeing like 2-3 different guys and all this. And then I come to find out she was just, it was just a cover. She was just an embittered romantic person that was, and she was very unhappy because her experience said to her that monogamy does not work because her marriage failed and some other things failed. So she created that belief system for her, and it confirms itself. It's true to her now. Her world, for her, that is true.
Okay.
Now, if you want to get into, there's some examples of, I mean, you give a simple example like, okay, if a baby's crawling on a couch, baby comes to the end of the couch and he falls off. The baby could come to believe that couches are bad because he had a painful experience, you know. You can learn the wrong life lessons from going through a painful experience. So you have to be careful about the conclusions you draw from things are your belief system. Everything that we believe pretty much is our choice and our perception and our belief system. And that Marcus Aurelius said that in like 33 AD. He said basically that anything you experience, your internal happiness, you can shift anything basically inside you. The externals have no effect on it in a way. I mean, that's a very loose paraphrase.
Okay. And just to be clear, again, I have no problem with positive thought. I don't. But just again, that film, and again, I've not read The Secret, so I can't speak to that specifically. Mm. But just the people who are involved with that film, and from what I've read in a very cursory way about The Secret, just, there are sort of troubling aspects to the various characters that are involved in this. That is, the people who are espousing these ideas, and that they believe other things that are so completely beyond reality that it's troubling. And then I find it difficult to look at them as a credible source. And I'll look more carefully at it, Robert. I'm not trying to.
No, I understand what you're saying. There's a scientific viewpoint of like, you know, okay, yeah, you look at the source of where an information comes from, and then just to decide whether or not it's valid. However, if there's some guy on the street, and he seems completely out of his mind, and you're standing there, and he says, "It's a nice day," and it's a nice day. Well, then it's a nice day.
But but you really can't trust that person.
Well, it's his perception that it's a nice day.
I mean,
you can decide for yourself.
He could have just accidentally realized it was a nice day.
No, what I'm saying is that you need to confirm these things for yourself. Of course, you don't believe anything anyone says. The trouble is, okay, there's two extremes. One, these people that just follow anything that comes out, and you know they're suckers. What did they say? Suckers born every minute. And then there's the other extreme. There's the people that think they're all intellectual and too sophisticated to believe anything. I lived in San Francisco for 9 years, man. I had 9 years of it. I had 9 years of people watching a fantastic band sitting with their feet up and not clapping because they're too cool. They know everything already. If that's the way you are and you're happy with your life, it's yours.
I always clap. It's just rude not to clap.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
I do. I really do.
No. I'm sure. I'm trying to make my point is, don't my point is you gotta be a mercenary about it. If you want to be happy and you want what you want in life, don't worry about what somebody's gonna think. And if you listen to The Secret and it helps you, you shouldn't give a damn what somebody thinks about The Secret, what they think about you for thinking about it. Or if you listen to Tony Robbins, or if you follow Christianity and it works for you, or if you're a Buddhist, and as long as you don't think that you've got the answer, that's the key. And but this idea of, I mean, this is such a long discussion, John, but you talked about scientific. I mean, if you want to go into science of the idea of thought manifesting reality, I mean, it's if you read what quantum physics is really about now, and the experiments being done, and how, you know, they mentioned some of these things in What the Bleep Do We Know, and these are things I already knew before, but the idea that experiments are being affected by the observation of the experiments.
No, of course.
Yeah.
And just finally on this, again, and I'm not a physicist, but from what I read at the time of that film, the criticism of it by true physicists was that the people who were involved with the film were distorting what was really possible and sort of ascribing certain value to these observations and facts in the physical world that just weren't accurate.
Well, they were presenting a belief system based on facts. So, and everyone does that. The funny thing is that scientists all have their own belief system too, and they have limits to what they will believe or not believe based on. I mean, there's good scientists and there's bad scientists. And the truth is, if you read the good scientists, we'll talk about a couple good scientists, Carl Pribram, neurophysicist, and David Bohm, Einstein's protege. Now, these guys believed. I don't know if you've read, there's a book called The Holographic Universe, came out in 1989, and I'm sure that the Wachowski brothers read that before they made The Matrix. They believe, they came to the conclusion that the universe is a hologram, okay? The universe is a hologrammatic projection of a deeper reality from somewhere else. And they both didn't know each other, and they both came to that conclusion by coming to the belief that the human brain was a hologram. And then when I say hologram in the sense of a system, a hologram, a system that each part of the human brain they believed had all the information of the brain in each section. And they came to that conclusion because they were doing operations on their experiments on mice, and they were cutting out parts of the mice brain, and they would have them go through a maze, and they were cutting out almost the whole brain of the mouse, and he still was stumbling through the maze. He knew the way. And this puzzled Pribram, the neurophysicist and neuroscientist, and at the same time, David Bohm came to the same conclusions about the universe for a different reason, through cosmology and physics, that he saw some program, and he's like, this is it, that the universe was a hologram. And this is a complicated idea, but the idea is these guys then met each other and they both had this exact same idea. So this has been a very powerful idea that our universe is, according to quantum physics, we're an energy wave. Underneath everything, we're an energy wave. Most people by now know that we are not solid matter. You know, we are molecules. We're moving all the time. Our body's not solid. But most people believe in 1950s science still. I mean, a lot of things that were believed in science are irrelevant now. Like the idea of time being linear is a complete myth. They know there is no past, present, future, linear, like a river, time flowing. Time doesn't flow. You read any book in the last 5 to 10 years on time and physics, and they say it's a nonsensical idea.
Well, at some point I'll have to revisit that in a more serious way. I will.
It's too long. But the holographic universe idea was just that the idea of manifesting thought, of having power, has scientific possible basis of fact.
No, these are all very interesting ideas.
And even if it's just positive, even if it's just for you, positive thinking, it's going to affect your vibe, how you talk to people,
sure,
your energy. It's worked in my life. That's all I got to say.
No, you seem like a very at ease person. You always have. And you have a show.
I wasn't before.
Coming up at the Pearl Lounge, this is happening Wednesday. The show starts at 9 o'clock. You are opening up, and the Rubberneckers are going on after you. You're actually playing a show with the Rubberneckers, and you brought your guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
You play a song?
I'm going to play a song about quantum physics.
You could. I would have to think about it quite a bit.
I'm actually a really fun guy, you know.
No, I didn't think otherwise.
Well, the discussion you had before I came on was very interesting, but the idea of technology and where that's all headed.
Mr. Smith, Frontline. Yeah. Watch it tomorrow, KTV.
Okay, let's see. Wow, this is going to bring things to a whole different lower level. Okay, this is actually a song that's going to be on the new album too. I don't even want to say new album because we have a new album out. It's out right now. It's called Touch, but we have another album that will be coming out maybe the end of next year or next fall. And this is one of the songs we're working on right now. And I'm not even going to tell you the name. You'll figure it out.
And perhaps another one. Is that something off of the new release? I'm sorry?
That's going to be off the upcoming album.
The upcoming album. Which, and when is that coming out?
Probably September, October of next year.
Okay.
Sure, we'll see.
Okay.
Working on it slowly. Let's see. God, I feel like I should play something off the album that's out now. Wouldn't that be right?
That makes sense. People can go buy it.
Let me see. I played Alien Skin last time I was here, though. I'm trying to think of another ballad. There's not many on there. Maybe I'll play... No, you play Alive all the time. I don't want to play that. John, I'm stuck.
Let's... The ballad. Searching for the elusive ballad.
Maybe I'll just play... I'll just play another new one, you know? Sorry.
Nicely done. Nicely done, Robert.
Thank you.
Robert Salish.
A little early, but...
No? No? You pulled it off? Robert Salish of Kiss the Girl, and he is playing a show by himself over at the Pearl Lounge this coming Wednesday, and this is with Rubberneckers. The show starts at 9 o'clock. You can find out more about Robert and Kiss the Girl through kissthegirlmusic.com. So, Robert, as always, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming down. I really do appreciate it.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Hello, and welcome to... store for details.
If you like Breakfast at the Alibi, you'll love this part. You can now order it from the Alibi's extensive breakfast menu throughout the entire day, from opening to midnight, so it doesn't matter when you get up, just that you do, and then head over to the Alibi for breakfast any time of the day. And Robert, you've been kind enough to pass me off something that's actually appearing on the new album, which is coming out, as you said, in 2008?
Yeah, hopefully fall 2008.
Well, works out well. And I'm sorry, do you have a title for that yet?
The album, it'll be called Get With It.
Get With It. And this particular song, this is called Brother Sister Freedom. So, this is the commercial radio debut of Kiss the Girl here on KSLog.
We'll be right back. such a sucker for the spin. They spit it out and you suck in. They give it out and you give in. You're such a sucker for the groove. They stick you in and you don't move. You play along to keep things smooth. Yet with it, don't wait for the king to come. Don't wait till you overcome. Don't you wanna be the one, brother, sister? Such a sentimental fool. You think they care, but they just rule. And your naivety is cruel. You think they're gonna let you in, and so you smile and take their spin. Gonna tell you what to do. So just sit back, shut tight, stare ahead, fall into. I hope that everything in the world works out for you. Shit, can't get with it. Don't wait for the king to come. Don't wait till you run out.
Humboldt's New Rock.